Hello and welcome. I'm Cassie McCullough and this is The List, and this week it's our special TV Club edition where we look at TV coming and going, news, previews, reviews, and Should I Bother? The segment where we go back to the beginning of a much hyped series and decide if it's worth having another look at. And today we are looking at Do you recognise that theme? It's 6 Feet Under. It aired from 2001 to 2005 and we'll be taking it apart in Should I Bother? Joining us in the clubhouse is Mark Humphreys, comedy writer and performer formerly of the ABC's Roast and most recently of SBS's The Feed.
Hello,
yeah. Mark.
Hello, it's wonderful to be back.
It's great to have you and your theme back on the show. Also with us as usual is Dan Barrett, the founder of the Televised Revolution and also deputy editor of Media Week. G'day, Dan.
Good afternoon, Cassie.
Now, today we also have a special guest with us and he has his own theme too, but I doubt that he'll get it. Anyone who can figure out what this is, it's g'day to Blake Ashford. He's a writer and producer. His recent credits include Devil's Playground, the ABC's The Code, and Cut Snake, the film. Anyone got it?
Not a clue.
No, it sounds great. That's very stirring.
Blake, I thought you would have got it because it's Blake Seven.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Oh, Blake Seven.
Oh, dear.
Oh, well, no prizes today. Oh, well. Now, on to news first up. And this is back in the ether.
CBS setting its phaser to stun for Star Trek fans.
The new Star Trek show will, quote, introduce new characters seeking imaginative worlds and new civilizations.
The new Star Trek will surprisingly not be connected to any of the existing continuities.
Does anyone really care that Star Trek's coming back? Dan Barrett.
People do care, Cassie. I mean, please. Star Trek, there is a huge fan base behind this. Now, the reason why CBS are doing it is they're looking at getting their online streaming service up and running to compete against the Netflixes of the world. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for a big title that people are enthusiastic about because they know that they can sell it not only to the American nerd public, yep, but also the international community of Star Trek fans will go nuts for this. It is a big deal. Traffic, so this is high.
What about you, Blake? I mean, obviously there's an evil business reason for this. It's not just out of the goodness of the hearts of TV executives. Are you excited?
About Star Trek in particular, not so much for me. I don't think I've ever seen an episode of Star Trek.
I'm with you, Blake.
All the way through.
Don't care.
I know. I know. I like the concept of it more than the actual watching of it. But, yeah, it makes complete sense why they're making it.
Yeah, very safe bets.
Yeah.
The last one was made back in 2006, so it's been a long time between series.
Not long enough.
What is wrong with you people? Seriously, a bunch of haters here. Jeez.
We want fresh concepts, Dan. That's what we're here for.
All right, now on to some more news of the week. And around this time of the year, we start to hear what television networks have planned for us next year. One of the things that has made headlines is Channel 9 committing to a lot of Australian content. House of Bond, a telly movie about Alan Bond, is coming up. Hide and Seek, a new contemporary crime thriller. And here come The Habibs, which is a fresh comic perspective to multicultural Australia. Dan, are you impressed? Is this a real commitment from Nine?
Look, I think that it is. You look at some of the shows like this and you've got Hide and Seek. It will actually be a really sort of in-depth drama, which will actually require you to pay a bit more attention. And Here Come the Habibs is the first comedy series they've had since, I think it's about 1999, 2000. So it's kind of nice to see Nine actually exploring some different genre than usual.
Blake, House of Bond, this is a lot safer territory than perhaps House of Hancock, which we saw, simply because the protagonist is, Alan Bond is dead and you can't defame the dead.
Yeah, look, they had a great hit with House of Hancock and it seems like it'll be a similar-ish thing. I think it'll go kind of well, this one.
Didn't they just going to keep going through the phone book? House of Ashford.
House of Skase.
House of Skase would be great.
Someone once told me these things are really hard to write because you either write good fiction or bad history. So finding the right way of telling a particular story that's juicy enough for an audience and also keeps you out of court is a trick. I wouldn't like to do it. I don't know exactly who's behind it, but it makes a lot of sense for me that Channel 9 might do this. The Habibs thing is the most interesting one of that list for me.
Yes. Now, this is, well, dangerous territory really for Australia, isn't it? Multicultural comedy.
Phil Lloyd is the writer who wrote The Moodies, and he wrote Review with Miles Barlow.
He's it's a really Jungle Boys thing, isn't it?
Talented guy. They've got really good people behind it. It seems like if there's anything that's glaring out in Australian TV is diversity of content and diversity of stories, and I think this is quite interesting.
Mark, it's a great setup, isn't it? It's a Lebanese-Australian family who win the lottery, like millions, tens of millions of dollars, and move into one of the most elite streets in Australia.
Yes, it sounds like it has immediate comedy potential, and there's a good couple of cast members that I've seen on there. One in particular is Darren Gilshannon, who I think really can't go wrong. You might have seen him recently in No Activity, and he was also in The Moodies. So, yeah, no, I mean, I'm very encouraged by this. I hope, actually, I feel bad for the people behind it, because I feel like there's a lot riding on it. If this doesn't work, it can have the effect of killing comedy at Nine for another two decades. though I don't expect Nine to be around in two decades. but yes, nevertheless, I really hope that this does work, because as a comedy writer myself, I'd love some work.
Please don't take that as financial advice from Mark Humphreys. Now, Blake, tell us what else you're hearing around the traps.
Oh, well, Foxtel have already filmed Secret City, which is the six-part political drama based on the novels by Chris Yuleman and Steve Lewis called The Marmalade Files.
So Canberra-based political.
Canberra-based political.
Is it a thriller or drama?
Yeah, it's a thriller. And they also have wrapped the Kettering Incident, which was that mystery series in Tasmania, which is all finished. And I think those two things are Foxtel's big Aussie dramas for next year, as well as another series of Place to Call Home and another series of Wentworth.
Now, on to the ABC. Christos Tsolkas is getting another run. Barracuda.
That's right. It's the four-part drama about an Olympic swimmer, about a boy who he gets to the Commonwealth Games. It's a very exciting project, yeah.
Did you hear that? The words exciting and Commonwealth Games used in the same
Okay, you are listening to The Television Club. In the clubhouse today, we have Mark Humphreys, screenwriter Blake Ashford, and Dan Barrett, and we're looking through the romper room mirror into what's happening in TV land. Now to a series that's begun on Netflix called Master of None. It's caused quite a sensation around the world. It stars Aziz Ansari, who is a comedian and actor who was born in America, in South Carolina, but his parents are Tamil Indians. Here's a moment where he's talking to his father. His real father is in this, and I think you'll find this scene familiar.
Hey, so I got a call back on that Black Virus movie. Could be cool.
Shit! 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 Shit!
What? What's wrong?
I just realized my calendar is not updating. Dr. Ramaswamy visiting. I forgot to pick him up in the train station.
Uh-oh. Friends visiting you all the way from India. Seems like you should pick him up.
I have all my appointments in the calendar. In the morning, a ding comes. Ding, ding, I plan my day. Ding, ding, I see what I have to do. There was no ding, ding today.
The appointments don't transfer automatically. You had to transfer them yourself.
I've been calling you to set it up. You never called me back. Could you please fix up this iPad for me?
Can I just do it later? I gotta go. I'm not your personal computer guy.
Mark Humphreys, have you ever said that to your dad?
Yes, I'm worried about the things that I've said to my dad that were mildly dismissive. I hope I haven't. Yes, I mean, this show certainly does make you reflect about your relationship with your parents. I love this show.
I love it too.
I know I normally come on here and be negative about things, but I think this is absolutely a triumph.
Okay, start from the beginning. Why? Why do you think it is?
Well, for me, Aziz Ansari is so likable. That's one thing. But also, there's just a great comedy style to this show. I'm laughing at things that really sort of, I'm getting great sort of surprise laughs. It's really terrific casting. You're seeing faces and ideas that you haven't seen on TV before, or at least not as much. It just feels really fresh. And yes, in this episode where they're sort of talking about the relationships you have with your parents and how maybe you're not grateful for what they went through, I think the decision that they made to go back and show the backstories of the Indian parent or the Chinese parent, that was just something I felt like I hadn't seen before. So it feels fresh and it's really funny.
It's very new. So the setup is that there's Dev, who's played by Aziz Ansari. He's an out-of-work actor. His friend Brian, whose parents are Chinese. And then there's another couple of friends. And they basically just schlep around Brooklyn talking about life. In lots of ways, to me, it's like Seinfeld in that it's a little bit about nothing. But it's not, actually. And it's far nicer and kinder than Seinfeld was. You sort of think Seinfeld looks nasty after you've seen this show. What did you think of it, Blake?
I loved it. Yeah, it was terrific. And also it had that incredible thing that US dramas do, even half an hour dramas do, like Girls, where they know just when to end a scene. He manages to get through a lot of really interesting things, but because they're through character and because they're through a story you're following, you don't feel... You're made aware that he's talking in a quite upfront way about race or upfront way about having a kid, but you're following these really delicious moments of observation through this character. Even from the start, where each of them is named and they've got the little credits at the start and their own theme every single episode, you know you're watching something kind of special and crafted.
Handcrafted.
Yeah, that's right.
Artisanal television.
Yeah, artisanal television.
Well, let's have another scene. This is where Dev is going for an audition for a role and the casting agent is playing across him.
Okay, we have Dev Shaw reading for the role of unnamed cab driver. You ready to go?
Yeah, I even took a cab over here to research the role.
I love that. Okay, let's begin. Do you recognize the girl in this photo?
I believe I remember her, yes. I drove her to Penn Station. She had a red sweater. What's wrong? Is she okay?
She's dead. Her body was found in the magazine section of Barnes & Noble, propped up to look like she was reading.
My God.
Okay. I want to try it again, but this time we need you to do an accent.
You mean like an Indian accent?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'd rather not. I just feel kind of weird doing that voice. Is that okay?
You know, Ben Kingsley did an accent in Gandhi, and he won the Oscar for it, so...
But he didn't win the Oscar just for doing the accent. I mean, it wasn't an Oscar for Best Indian Accent.
Yes, the whole episode called Indians on TV addresses this idea of casting. And what do you like about this, Dan?
First of all, I should say I love the show as well. It's by far the best series on Netflix so far. What I think works about it is that we've seen over the last couple of years Louis come along, and kind of very similar to this, it's a show that kind of eschews the idea of cynicism as being a driving force behind the comedy in the program. But this, it really takes its cues from Louis. It takes its cues from 70s era Woody Allen. And it's a very progressive look at the way that minorities are treated in America these days. It's a look at the way that women are treated. There's an amazing episode where they show pretty much a night out from the perception of Aziz and his friends. But while the guys just had a good time, were talking about dumb things, the girls were constantly being hit on. They were being followed home at the end of the night. It's scenes like that yes. I think really sort of bring out the comedic view that could only come from Aziz and the experiences that he's had. And we don't see anything that's specific, I guess, from most comedians.
I love what you're saying about cynicism being naive now that's an outdated form of comedy. And yes, it definitely is influenced by Louis, by Girls, the Lena Dunham series, also bit by maybe Broad City, and even the sensibility of Transparent and Catastrophe. There seems to me to be a kind of milieu of comedy played out in TV drama.
I mean, all the ones you mentioned are half an hour dramas as well, which we don't make here. And the amount that he packs into half an hour or 22 minutes is incredible. That's the same length as an episode of Neighbours, and you think of the...
Yes.
Well, you know, the textual richness of in the 25 minutes is terrific.
Well, in fairness, we do have some similar programs in Australia. So there's Josh Thomas's Please Like Me,
yes,
which treads very similar ground in many regards.
Isn't that interesting? Because they are all comedians.
Well, I think what's interesting is, yes, that it is all comedians. And I wonder whether there's room for dramatic actors to create their own content in the same way that a comedian can. I mean, Blake, you're a screenwriter. I don't know what your experience is with actors and whether you think they're, can Rebecca Gibney write her own half-hour drama?
It might be something about the half-an-hour form that seems to be able to be managed by a sensibility, Dan was saying, whereas once you get into an hour, you move out of one character's point of view quite often and move into different characters' points of view, and that might be something that's less suitable to the expression of one person's sort of idiosyncratic.
Because the hour owes itself more to the ongoing narrative, whereas the half hour can get away with being a self-contained story in a way that dramas these days can't.
Well, all right, I'm giving it 5 stars. Any other bids on that?
Yeah. 6 stars, yeah.
27 stars.
Look, I'm going to give it 4. I think it was great. I don't know if Aziz Ansari is a good actor.
Oh, no, he's terrible.
Like,
and he's got a really weird voice.
Like, sorry. I really liked him, but when I read that interview where he said, I didn't get that role in that movie and I didn't get that role in that movie, I thought, it doesn't surprise me that you didn't get that role in that Aaron Sorkin movie because you're not...
Right, yeah, sure.
You know, you're good in your own show. But he is fantastic in Parks and Rec. But
yeah, interesting. Okay, now to our favourite segment, Should I Bother? And this week, Blake Ashford has nominated 6 Feet Under. It ran for 5 seasons and 63 episodes from July 2001 to 2005. Blake, what's the setup?
The setup is there's a family who run a funeral home in Los Angeles, in suburban Los Angeles, and the patriarch, played by Richard Jenkins, is killed. And at the same time as the estranged eldest son returns, yes. And he has to assume reluctantly the mantle of the man of the house. And at the end of the first episode, the mother sort of, in true TV pilot way, sort of asks him to stick around. And we know that he's going to stick around for 63 episodes of the television program. but there are a few of those notes where you realize you're watching a setup of a show. But what transpires after that is every week a body comes in. We all meet the relatives of the deceased. There's the mechanics of how you actually work in a funeral home, involving embalming, involving burial, involving all those sort of secular rituals that we have. And then there's these quite dysfunctional family relationships to propel us through. So
here's a scene. In the very first moments of the pilot, the father is killed in a traffic accident. It's the night before Christmas. The mother is at the morgue, but she doesn't feel like she can go in and identify her husband. Her eldest son, Nate, turns up with our Rachel Griffith, who he's met on a plane and has, excuse the language, just screwed in a broom closet. And here's the scene.
How'd he look?
Dead.
Will there need to be a lot of reconstruction? David's not that skilled at the really hard stuff. Federico usually does that. He's quite gifted. You don't think we'll have to have a closed casket, do you? I would hate to send that message.
What message?
That we're not equipped to handle a major restoration, or that we're not proud of our work.
Mom, can we talk about this later? We should really get Nate home. He's probably exhausted. Let's go.
Thanks for driving me here.
Please, just avoiding my own hell. I'm a big coward.
Me too. I don't know if I can handle this.
Wow. You're about to find out. I wish you the best, Nate.
Mark Humphries, did you enjoy this?
Yes. Well, it's nice that there are these sort of instructional shows, like 6 Feet Under. So if you need to get into embalming, you're good. Breaking Bad, if you need to get into drug manufacturing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really helpful, I think. Yes, look, I really enjoyed this because I think the characters were very strong right out of the gate. And going with that were some fine performances, particularly Frances Conroy, who...
the mother.
I think is just wonderful. But the only thing I would say against this is that my wife wasn't into it, so I'm probably not going to end up continuing with it.
Dan, Alan Ball is the creator, the man behind American Beauty and also True Blood.
And Sybil. Let's not forget Sybil.
Sybil.
Yeah, Sybil Shepherd's sitcom from the mid-90s.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah. What do you think of
it? Okay, I've got this problem with the show, which is that it is a show which, like, Blake, I can tell, is in love with the show. Like, he loves it. And there's lots of people like Blake who really have this strong just connection with the show in a way that I've never been able to myself. And so every time I come to the show, I expect to be able to find that same point of contact, but it always leaves me cold. I can recognize how great the performances are. I like most of the actors in it, Rachel Griffiths. But beyond that, I don't know what it is about the show that just leaves me sitting there with my arms crossed, and I cannot find myself to actually want to come over and be involved in this show beyond the pilot. And I've watched it about 4 or 5 times over the last decade, and I can never find the will to want to keep on going.
Interesting you say that, because I do remember catching it at the time when it was out here and there. I didn't watch it start to finish. But I was knocked out by the pilot. I really really thought, gee, I could probably keep going with this. Let's hear another scene. There is a lot of existential agonising in this, and perhaps that's where a lot of the richness comes for people. In this scene, Nate is in the funeral parlour. There's a viewing of his father's body, and he's sitting with his sister, who is still feeling the effects of crystal meth 3 days after having a pipe with her boyfriend.
I came home expecting to sleep late and chat on mom's cooking for 6 days. Now I find myself feeling like I'm not even a part of this family.
I'll trade places with you in a heartbeat. What? At least you got out of here.
I live in a shitty apartment, which was supposed to be temporary. I work at a job, which was also supposed to be temporary until I figured out what I really wanted to do with my life, which apparently is nothing. I have lots of sex, but I haven't had a relationship last more than a couple of months. I don't even have the self-discipline to floss daily. I've had 4 root canals. 4. I'm 35. I've had 4 root canals. I'm going to be one of those losers who ends up in his deathbed saying, where'd my life go?
No, you won't. You'll be saying, where the hell's the morphine?
Well, that's what she'll be saying.
I love at the end of that scene as well, doesn't she? He goes on his big selfish sort of self-absorbed rant and she goes, that cop is so hot. Like, you know, when she's looking at at Keith. Yeah, yeah.
And Keith is another wonderful, surprising character. The other brother, Nate's brother David, is a very uptight guy and you think, this guy probably is probably gay but doesn't realise it. And then halfway through the series, his boyfriend shows up and he's this gorgeous black cop and he's fully come to terms with his sexuality.
I think at the time I started watching it, and this is really, for writers of my generation, this is the show. This is the show why we had Love My Way and Tangle and Offspring, and this is the show that all those shows I know, the creators of those were really influenced in, and it was the fact that you could talk about death without having to have cops in it and bodies in it, like murders in it. You could talk about mortality in that way. The way that Alan Ball shifts tone frequently was quite unusual at the time, Dan, that there's real human emotion. Then there's a lot of laughs in the series as well. There's surrealistic kind of moments. It felt like he'd opened up the palette of dramatic possibility and was just really going for it.
I think that's the interesting thing about the show, in that around death, people are at their most emotionally raw. And so within that, you can explore humanity in a way that I don't think you can with any other concept, really.
Yeah, it's a great dramatic device. It's
very much so.
Now, what about this? Do you think it's dated at all? There are throughout the show, I think you pointed it out, Blake, that there's some surreal moments in it, and they take the form of these ads. Here's one.
For a body that's firm yet flexible, for skin that begs to be touched, for the velvety appearance of actual living tissue, top morticians rely on Living Splendor embalming fluid. Living Splendor. Only real life is better.
You've been using a bit of that, haven't you, Mark?
Well, how else do you explain this appearance? Did they continue with that beyond the pilot? No, is that just...
Yeah, they drop it, I think, because... Yeah. They
because
felt
it is
a bit...
quite, yes, it is a curious choice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a late 90s pastiche feel.
Right, why do you think that is? What?
Look, the one thing I noticed when I was watching it last night was, one, Alan Ball's direction I don't really love. Like, I think he's quite a tricky director in a way that when they got people like Lisa Cholodenko and Nicole Holofcener to be the directors, that the drama evened out a bit. But
give us an example of that.
Well, he does a lot of shooting from up in the air, which is obviously he's making some kind of godlike point, but I find it kind of, it's drawing attention to the fact of its own direction in a way that, and then he'll just sit the camera in front of those two characters and have them go. So it felt like quite a mix of styles. And also it clocked in at like over an hour, which is long for a drama, you know, and I felt that towards the end that they put those advertisements in. Without the advertisements, it would have come back to 50 minutes, which is what we're used to. And I could feel that in the drama. But I know that it was important for him as a writer to be able to control what that pilot was. But certainly when you're doing a pilot, you don't know what the strengths of the drama will be. And for me, the strengths of the drama are, you know, Nate and David and Ruth. It's the people.
Mm.
It's not the visual pyrotechnics in the direction that's going to bring me back to that show.
Mm. Well, I loved it. Thank you very much for reminding me of it. And I urge others to go and have a look. Mark? Yes.
So I think you probably should bother is the verdict, but Mrs. Humphreys means I will not be bothering.
And probably a no from you, Dan.
Yeah, I'm hanging out with Mark's wife. How awkward.
Yeah, that's a whole other show. Yeah. Okay, just before we go, and briefly, to recommendations, what are we looking forward to? I'm going to go first because I've found something that I absolutely love. It's called Dr. Foster. It's just aired on the BBC in the UK. It's going to be starting on Foxtel's BBC channel on the 17th. All the details we'll put on the website. It follows a doctor. Funnily enough, because it's called Dr. Foster. Her name's Gemma. She runs a general practice. She seems to have this perfect life. In the first 3 minutes, she's rushed into work, met her friends, etc. And then she puts a scarf on the back hook of her surgery door. It's her husband's scarf, and she sees a long blonde hair on it. And her perfect world is about to unravel. Have you heard anything of this, Blake?
When I was speaking to the BBC last year, if there's a trend in drama at the moment, especially over there, it's slowing things down. Don't race through a story. Take it step by step.
It's a study in paranoia and suspicion. But it is part of this movement. I think it's being described as domestic noir.
Right.
And with a female lead. So she... we've seen Happy Valley, The Fall, a couple of others in this genre, which is shaking up a lot of the gender politics at the moment in these big dramas and thrillers. So, yeah, I love it. Look out for it. Dr. Foster. Mark.
I'm really into The Great British Baking Show.
No way.
Moment. Yeah. Because I'm sort of done with MasterChef and all the other cooking shows. I found this really calming.
Blake.
I just recently saw Show Me a Hero, the new David Simon drama set in the 1980s in Yonkers in New York about the integration of lower income housing into what is a conservative white neighbourhood. I don't know if it sounds promising to people. It's got this incredible performance by Oscar Isaac in it. It's sophisticated. Winona Ryder is in it.
Oh, wow.
It's six parts, not too long, and it's happy and sad. Yeah, it's like really good drama.
Okay, Show Me a Hero. And Dan, finally to you.
A huge recommendation for Project Greenlight. It is Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. They created a production company a few years ago, and the idea is that filmmakers come in. They have, you know, like 10, 15 filmmakers who pitch their short films at them. They choose one filmmaker and go off and make a movie with them. And so we see the process of making a movie in a very short time period, and it's about following the excessive whims of the director in the current season, the producer who's trying to hold him back in line, and the human tension that comes between the two of them. It's highly entertaining.
Very good. Okay, well, thank you all to our Clubhouse clubbies today, Marky Mark Humphreys, the comedian, writer, and now you can see him on the feed on SBS2, Blake Ashford, creator of Cut Snake and also screenwriter of many of the things you're watching on television, and also Dan Barish, content director of Televised Revolution and deputy editor of Media Week.
Thanks, Cassie.
Thank you.
Bye.
Those guys, too much TV's gone to their head. I'm Cassie McCullough. This is The List. If you want to check out those recommendations, do go to the program page. You'll find all the details there. I'll see you next week.